deliberately planned false flag or whether it is accidental or a blowback or an unintended consequence, it's always used to expand the state.
Welcome back to another edition of the Prepper Recon Podcast. Our mission is to bring you great interviews with preppers from around the world so you can be better informed and better prepared for everything from a hurricane to the end of the world as we know it.
I've personally been buying gold and silver from JM Bullion for over 2 years. They offer the best prices over spot that I can find, and I've never had a problem with an order. If you're looking to trade in some of your fiat paper for real money, check out jmbullion.com today. Today's guest is Dr. Catherine Albright. She's an author, privacy advocate, and host of the Catherine Albright Show on GCN. Dr. Albright, welcome to the show.
Hey, it's great to be on with you today.
Oh, absolutely. It's a real honor to have you. Now, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and when you first became aware of the corporate surveillance state?
Well, let's see. I have a doctorate in human development and psychology from Harvard University, where my focus was on consumer education. And back in the late 1990s, actually 1999, I became aware that the supermarket frequent shopper cards that people were carrying around in their wallets were actually not discount cards, but they were what I call shopper surveillance cards. They were making a record, or their whole purpose was to make an itemized record of the individual items that people were purchasing. So I started a consumer organization, kind of as an armchair activist, called Caspian, Consumers Against Supermarket Privacy Invasion and Numbering. It's still online at nocards.org, and wound up devoting my academic studies to researching how aware people were of this very invasive or very privacy-invading technology. And what I found is, even though over 90% of households have one of these cards, fewer than 25% of Americans were aware that the cards were being used to make a record of their purchases. And as a Christian, I was very concerned because, of course, when you're using a number to record your purchases to buy and sell, then you start getting into the possibility of rationing and government control and all sorts of other things. And you also get into biblical prophetic territory, where it talks about a time when all purchases will require a number in order to make any kind of transaction. And that, of course, is the mark of the beast. So that I think my activism has really run on parallel tracks, both as a Christian and also as a secular activist. I've spoken before the European Commission and various state legislatures, authored numerous pieces of legislation, testified before the Federal Trade Commission. I've kind of been everywhere speaking to people about these issues. I am the co-author of the best-selling book Spy Chips, which talked about the RFID, or the plans to replace barcodes with RFID tracking devices. And of course, we're seeing that now has been rebranded as the Internet of Things. And just been cautioning people and warning people about these things for quite some time. And my most recent project is a children's book for Christian parents and grandparents to share with their children to make them aware that all of these technologies that their kids may be taking for granted may have prophetic implications. That book is called I Won't Take the Mark, and it basically retells the story of Revelation about the mark of the beast so kids can be aware.
And how's that been received? Have you found that a large part of the church expects to be raptured out way before we ever have to face any tough times or persecution here in America?
You know, it's kind of interesting. When I was a kid, back in the 1970s, when my grandmother first told me about the Mark of the Beast, there was really a broad awareness. I think the churches preached about it. There were movies, TV shows. I even play a song on my radio program that was commonly played on the radio back then about the Mark of the Beast. So it was a topic that everybody probably over the age of 40 today was familiar with growing up. And what I found kind of interesting is, and ironic and odd, is that now that we are actually able to implement the Mark of the Beast, which we couldn't have done when I was a kid and in the 1970s. In fact, we've only been able to do it for about the last 5 years or so. Now that it's actually possible to do it, no one wants to talk about it. So it's not being discussed in the churches, in the pulpits. You can talk to young people who have been to Sunday school every Sunday and attended Vacation Bible School every summer, and they will say, when you say, hey, what can you tell me about the Mark of the Beast? They'll say, what is that? The what of the, huh? And they have really no clue. So I think our generation has done a disservice to the upcoming generation. We are really the first generation to have dropped the ball in educating our young people about this fundamental tenet of the Christian faith. And this goes back, you know, we've got 2.6 billion Christians on the planet, and this has been one of the key themes of Christendom from the very beginning, something that's been, you know, Isaac Newton devoted over a million words to trying to understand biblical prophecy. He was very interested in the mark of the beast, although he lived at a time when he couldn't have understood what it was. But now that we're actually living in the time when we can implement it, we're not talking about it. And I think a part of it is the church really has moved into maybe to save attendance numbers, has moved into kind of a feel-good theology phase where maybe some of the more worrisome messages of Revelation just are not popular right now. You know, they want to put in coffee shops and have electric guitar and make church into kind of a fun place, and it can be a little bit challenging to say, hey, the technology that everybody's addicted to today might be, you know, might be fulfilling biblical prophecy. So I think that's part of it, and I also think there's really been a trend in recent years within the church to, as you said, move towards a rapture theology. And I actually had an experience back in a couple of years ago where we wanted to go, I actually headed up it's a long story. They were chipping Alzheimer's patients with microchip implants down in West Palm Beach, Florida. And they had lined up 200 people to receive these implants. And as a social science researcher, I was horrified that these are people that could not give informed consent to participate in this research because obviously they have Alzheimer's. They didn't even know what was being done to them. And you might have seen some clips on Good Morning America of some elderly people being chipped, and they were completely not understanding what was happening. So I decided that I was going to fly down to West Palm Beach with a group of members of my 18,000-member consumer organization, Caspian, and we were going to do a prayer vigil outside of the Alzheimer's facility. And so since I'm up here in New Hampshire and I don't really know anybody in Florida, and I didn't really want to head up the prayer vigil myself, I contacted churches in the area. So I got a phone book and I called up all the local churches. And I could not find one single church in West Palm Beach, Florida that was willing to send a pastor to our prayer vigil to oppose the microchipping of human beings with this implantation technology. And what I would get when I would call up is I would get typically a church secretary, and I would say, well, did you know that they're chipping Alzheimer's patients in your community? And they would say either one of two things. That sounds fantastic. How can I sign up my elderly parent? Which really stunned me. Or they would say, why are you worried about this? Don't you know the church is just going to be raptured away, and this isn't the kind of thing that Christians need to be spending their time about on or worrying about? And it's really a reflection of a lack of faith on your part, Catherine, that you want to come out here and even address this at all. So I after calling probably 20, 25 churches, I finally said, okay, Lord, I'm not sure what you're trying to have me do, but I feel a need to fly out there and do this vigil. So we flew out, we held a press conference, we had the Associated Press and all the local television, and then we did a one-mile march to the facility. And so we're holding up our protest signs and we're marching to the facility where I figure if it comes down to it, I'll just deliver the prayer myself. And at that moment, I just have to tell you how the Lord is truly amazing and how he intervenes. A pickup truck pulls up beside us as we're marching with our signs, and a gentleman rolls down the window and he says, I couldn't agree with you more. I've seen your signs. I'm a pastor. Is there any way I can help you? And so he wound up, the Lord sent us a pastor literally as we stepped out on faith to this event, and he wound up delivering the prayer as we were outside of the facility. And the good news of that was I had worked for 6 months with Todd Lewin, who is an investigative reporter with the Associated Press, on research that I had found showing that these implantable microchips were causing cancer in laboratory animals. And it's quite a scandal. The Food and Drug Administration, when they approved this device, never reviewed the evidence showing a clear-cut link between these implants and cancer. And when that story broke after our prayer vigil, we basically decimated the microchipping of humans in the U.S. There have been no people chipped since that time. In fact, when the story broke that between 1 and 10% of laboratory animals implanted with microchips develop cancer around the microchips, it's happening with people's dogs and cats, their pets. It's happening with horses and llamas and bats. And basically anything you implant with this has a potential to develop cancer around it. And when that story broke, they canceled all of the chipping trials in the U.S. So Blue Cross Blue Shield was chipping diabetic patients. They quietly removed all those microchips and canceled the program. Tommy Thompson, the former Secretary of Health and Human Services, stepped down from a position on the board of directors for the Verichip Corporation, where he was hawking this technology, and quietly moved away from that. We saw the end of the chipping of the Alzheimer's patients, and basically the company was decimated. It went from trading at about $11 a share down to trading at about 20 cents a share, and they were delisted from the stock exchange. So that was just a tremendous victory, and I think it was really a victory in the Lord, and just seeing how he came through for us even when we weren't quite sure what was going to happen was just an incredible experience. So in the U.S., no one is being microchipped currently unless they're going to a hobbyist, you know, unless they're a hobbyist going to some kind of tattoo artist in some grungy tattoo parlor to have these chips implanted, but there's no legitimate use for them at this time in the U.S.
Well, that's just a great victory, and that's an awesome story as well, because sometimes we feel like Elijah, where he's looking around and he's saying, you know, I'm the only one left, and then God will kind of speak to you, and he's like, no, I've got other prophets that haven't bowed their knee to Baal yet. And but largely, the pastorates really sort of dropped the ball, and they're not speaking out politically, and they don't want to get involved in politics. I mean, there's, with a few exceptions, But a large majority of American pastors are not standing up for any of this. And we're starting to see now the blatant persecution of Christians in America. We're seeing bakers, florists, wedding chapel owners, photographers, they're all being sued for not participating in gay weddings. Does that disturb some people's pre-trib eschatological views, do you think?
Well, the Bible makes it very clear that Christians, I mean, you don't even have to read the Bible to figure this out, although it's certainly in there, but you can just look at other countries and other places, and there are places on the globe where even now people will be tortured and imprisoned if they speak the name of Christ. So to think somehow that Americans are kind of an exception, or we're some kind of golden people that will not be exposed to this kind of tribulation, I think just doesn't suit what the Bible says. I mean, the Bible says take up your cross and follow me. It doesn't say, you know, have a cushy, happy life in a country that totally supports you. It says, you know, if you speak my name to people, you will be hated by all men. And I think that we are seeing the fulfillment of that. Christians have always faced that. But I think we're going to see it in much larger numbers, and we're going to have to really make a decision. Do we want the popularity of you know, man? Do we want, is that where we draw our strength? Is that where we find our comfort? Is that what we consider truth? Or do we want to stay true to what we know is true and face the onslaught and the hatred of mankind, which is what we're told we'll be up for? So I absolutely believe that the promises of the Bible are true, but one of the promises in the Bible is that you're going to have a tough time. This is not easy stuff.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. KD Armor offers affordable body armor, including level 3 trauma plates made of AR-500 steel. They can endure multiple rounds from pistols and rifles up to 7.62 NATO. Their plates are available with Rhino Linings coatings to reduce spaw. Go to KDArmor.com, that's CATIArmor.com today.
When disaster strikes, it's too late to prepare. PrepperRecon.com offers MOLLE-compatible individual first aid kits for your home, auto, or bug-out bag. These kits have everything you need to address a traumatic injury, including an Israeli battle dressing, quick clot, EMT shears, suture kit, Steri-Strips, tourniquet, ACS chest seal, tough strip bandages, gauze, and so much more. $89 includes shipping. To buy your individual first aid kit, go to PrepperRecon.com and click the store tab at the top of the homepage. Order today before it's too late.
And you mentioned your first book, Spy Chips. And now that was written about 9 years ago. And thanks to the Snowden links, folks are fairly well aware that their Google, Facebook, Twitter, Yahoo accounts, all of that's just data collection points for the NSA. But 9 years ago, were people ready for this information, or did you see a lot of folks choosing the blue pill?
I think people people had a hard time believing it, but one of the things that my co-author Liz McIntyre and I did when we wrote the book is we went through 30,000 different documents, and we provided rock-solid documentation of every word that's in spy chips. So we went through white papers, we went through patent filings documents, so it really wasn't just sort of our conjecture. We were telling in their own words what these companies planned to do with these technologies, and I think that's really what made it an explosive bestseller. We hit number 6 on Amazon, was the fact that here in their own words, companies themselves, maybe not realizing that they were going to be reported on, but they were very clearly coming out and saying, we're going to use these technologies to track people everywhere they go. We're going to track them in bus stops, museums, theaters, libraries. We're going to put tracking devices in the walls that will interact with tiny microchips in their belongings, and they won't know the difference, and we'll be able to know where they go, who they associate with, what they care about, what's in their pockets, what's in their backpack. We'll be able to track them everywhere. And as we read these really horrific and very ambitious plans to monitor and surveil every human being on the globe, essentially, through these technologies, I have to say I was horrified, and particularly because they said this stuff is invisible, it's tasteless, it's colorless, it's odorless, nobody will know we're doing it. And so one of the goals really in writing Spy Chips was to say, oh yeah, well, we're going to go ahead and tell them that you're going to do it then, because this can't be allowed to stand and be implemented without somebody sounding the alarm and crying foul. So a lot of the nastier plans that we exposed in Spy Chips were quietly canceled. And a lot of that just kind of went away, in the same way that the microchipping of Alzheimer's patients, we were able to fight that and stop it too. So a lot of the work that I've done over the last 15 years has really been in stopping nasty plans from moving forward. And unfortunately, there's only so much of that you can do, because when you've got these huge resources, as does Google and DARPA and the NASA, or not NASA, the NSA, they're in a position to come up with all sorts of clever ways to find information about people. And what I like to say, just in explaining the era that we're living in, 20th century tyranny used to be about guns and tanks. You comply or we will kill you. And that worked relatively well, but you always had the risk that people were going to try to overthrow a government like that was tyrannical and hated. And what 21st century tyranny is about, really within the last 10 years or so, has been not only getting people to be their own jailers, but getting them to pay for the privilege. And so when you see people walking around and they've got, they're glued to their iPhones and they've got the GPS tracking and they're logged into every Google service under the sun, they're actually paying for the privilege of using tracking technologies and being tracked in ways that I think Hitler and Stalin would have absolutely salivated over and paid a huge amount to impose on people at gunpoint. And so we're in this era now where you thank them for the privilege of giving, you pay $500 for your smartphone and you install all the tracking devices in there yourself, and then they not only get to track you, but they get to laugh all the way to the bank because you're totally a participant in the system and making them rich in the meantime.
One of my 2015 resolutions was to quit volunteering so much information to the government. What advice would you have for me and other folks out there that maybe want to try to do the same thing?
Well, it depends on whether you mean information that you're openly volunteering to the government, like, in the form of your tax returns or other things, or whether you're talking about the kind of information that they're collecting sort of surreptitiously or behind the scenes. And I think Ed Snowden gave us a lot of data points on that. These are things that those of us who've been following this for a while were not surprised by, but I think the general public found it very helpful to say, oh, wait a minute, you mean they really are reading all my email? You mean they really are looking at all my searches? You mean they really are looking at every website I visit and categorizing me according to my political views and according to these various things? And the answer is yes, absolutely, they're doing that, and there are some easy ways that you can get yourself out of that particular spotlight of being watched and observed. And I've actually helped to, in fact, for the last 6 years, that's what I've been working on. In 2009, I helped to create a search engine called StartPage, which this basically came about because I realized that Google, which 90-plus% of Americans are using, is not a search engine. And whenever I say this, people go, what do you mean it's not a search engine? Of course it's a search engine. But Google really isn't a search engine, because you can tell what a company is by how it makes its money. If you're manufacturing cars, then you're a car company. If you're selling ice cream, you're an ice cream company. And what Google does is, it provides you with a search engine, but it doesn't make any money from that. When was the last time you paid Google to use their search engine? When was the last time you paid any multinational global corporation worth billions of dollars absolutely zero for all their products? How they couldn't stay in business. And the answer is, that's not where they make their money. They make their money as a market research company. They make their money off of marketing data. And so Google is not a search engine. It's a market research company. And their products are not products. They're actually bait designed to lure you in to provide your personal information to them. And if you think about this, if I were to call up your listeners and start asking questions like, you ever been in marriage counseling? Got any drug problems? How are your finances? How's your health? Are you worried about cancer? Where'd you have dinner last night? If I were to call up randomly and say, I'm a market researcher, can you answer these questions? You'd slam down the phone so fast to make my head spin. But what Google came up with is a way to ask you those very same questions 20, 30, 40 times a day by just giving you a window where you can type the answers. And so when we log on to Google, we think we're alone. There's nobody in the room, nobody looking over their shoulder. The door's shut. The blinds are drawn. And so we go in and we search for very personal things on Google. And what we need to understand is that the reason they've provided you with that window in the middle of your screen, that portal that answers all your questions, is not because they want to answer all your questions. They don't make any money from answering your questions, but they want to know what the questions are. So they know the name of the person who cuts your hair, because people don't use the phone book anymore. You looked up, hair cutters are us in Google, and so they know you got your hair cut last Wednesday. They know what your wife cooked for dinner last night, because she looked up the recipe on Google. They know if you're dealing with some kind of legal or financial or medical issue, because you're searching for all that stuff on Google. And believe me, they've got a very, very sophisticated algorithm and a program whereby they take all that data and they store it in a database with our name at the top of each record. And those databases are probably thicker than the phone book in terms of information that they know about us based on what we're searching for and what we're typing into their services. And when that wasn't enough, in 2004, Google, kind of buoyed up by the success of this market research effort that nobody seemed to catch on to and understand what it was, they then decided that they wanted to be able to read everybody's email. And, of course, there's no legal way that they could hack into your system and read people's email. Back in 2004, we had Earthlink, we had AOL, we had Hotmail, we had Yahoo Mail, and there was no Google Mail. And so Google wanted a way to read the email correspondence occurring between people, but they couldn't do it. And so they had enough money at that point. They came up with the bright idea, what if we create our own email program, make it very attractive, lure millions of people onto it, and then we will have a bird's eye view of all of their personal private correspondence if we set our terms of service right, that we can watch what they're writing. So in 2004, prior to the advent of Gmail, all email programs had really good privacy policies. They were like the U.S. Postal Service. You put something in an envelope, they promise not to open it and read it. They just deliver it. You pay for the stamp. That's the end of the story. And in 2004, Google introduced this whole new concept, which is, we're going to give you this brilliant email account with lots of storage, but there's just like one little catch. We're going to read every single thing you read and write and every email you send and receive, and we're going to note all of the personal correspondence that you have, your love letters, your financial information, anything that's transferring through email is fair game for us to have. And if you think about it, the amount of money it costs to support the millions of email programs that Gmail is supporting, why are they doing that for free? Well, they're doing it for free because it gives them way more value and bang for the buck in terms of personal information that they are legally able to spy on, which otherwise they'd have to break into your account in order and hack in order to read. So in 2004, I was part of a coalition back then of ACLU and EPIC and EFF and Privacy International, all the privacy groups, about 25 of us wrote into Google and said, don't do it, because this is a crazy new terms of service you're introducing. You're going to actually read people's email? And we said, if you do this, you're going to change the nature of email, and all of your competitors are going to start doing the same thing. Well, guess what? They've exactly done that. And in fact, Google's Gmail program and all of their market research spying has proven so immensely successful that now the entire internet is based on that model. Every single free service, quote unquote, that you find on the internet is based on them wanting your information and trying to come up with a product to lure you to sacrifice it to them so they can get it. So if you look at MailChimp, which manages mailing lists, it's exactly the same model. They just want your mailing list. They don't want to help you manage your mail. They want to know your mailing list so they can cross-reference it with other mailing lists so they can use the data for their own purposes. And that's true for pretty much every service that's on the Internet now, thanks to Google in 2004. So what I've worked for the last 3 years to develop a competing product called Start Mail. Remember we talked about Start Page, the private search engine. And Start Mail is a private email service that is absolutely state-of-the-art. We've incorporated all the privacy features that Ed Snowden says really work against the NSA. We've got PGP encryption down to one click, so you don't need a degree in computer science. You can just click the button that says encrypt this email, and then nobody can read it. We don't read your email, and we're back to the pre-2004 policy of it's a sealed envelope. We don't read it. We can't read it. We don't want to read it. All we do is deliver it from point A to point B, and then we put about 5 layers of protection on it so nobody else can read it either. And so we've really kind of taken email back to state-of-the-art privacy from 2015, but 2004 privacy policies that say totally your business. And of course, our customers are our customers. Our customers are the people with email accounts. That's who pays us. That's who we answer to. We're not beholden to, we don't answer to any government or marketers or any other entities whatsoever other than our customers. So we charge $5 a month for the service. It's $60 a year. It is currently we're offering 3 accounts for the price of 1, so it gets the price down to about $1.66 a month, and you can't even buy a book of stamps and send your bills for that. And it is fully private, so we're really hoping that people will wake up and realize the wool has been pulled over our eyes for over 10 years now through Gmail, which is designed specifically to be a spy program, that they've placed themselves right in the middle of our communications so they can watch them. And with April 15th is coming up, so we've got tax season. Do you know if your accountant sends your tax return as an electronic attachment through a Gmail account, whether you have a Gmail or they have a Gmail, or Yahoo or Hotmail for that matter, the company will actually open up your tax return, strip out your Social Security number, your accountant's name, your kids' names, your deductions, your mortgage deduction, the value of your home, you name it, they will snag it straight out of the attachment that is included with your email. And I got to say, if somebody were breaking into my house or if somebody were opening my postal mail and photocopying my tax returns, I would say they would belong in jail. And yet millions of people allow this to happen to their most intimate details that are passed through email every single day by using these services. So it's truly appalling. Startmail.com is the website. We have 7-day free trial, so if people want to check it out, it's no obligation. You can just give it a try, kick the tires, see what you think of it. There's a 2-minute video overview that I created to help people understand why it's important and what we do, and that's at startmail.com. And then the free service that we offer is Start Page, and also our sister search engine, IxQuick, IxQuick. And let me tell you what they do. So when you go to Google, you get a window, you type in a question, they give you the answer. When you go to Start Page, you also get a window, you type in a question, we give you the answer. But the way Start Page works is when you type in your question, we submit it to Google for you. We do about 5.5 million searches a day. They all just flow from our server into their server, so they have no idea who you are. They don't see your IP address. They can't put tracking cookies on your browser. They have no clue who's asking these questions. So we submit the questions to them. We give you the answers privately and anonymously, and then we delete all records of your visit. So we don't store what you searched for. We don't know your IP address, and at the end of the day, there are 0 records on our server of what we've done other than the sheer number of searches that we've served. So that's all we record. Now, we do get the answers from Google, and some people say, well, I don't want anything to do with Google. I don't even want Google search results. And for those people, we have IxQuick, which is IxQuick, IxQuick.com. And IxQuick searches a number of other search engines, but not Google. So you'll get results from other search engines instead. And I've found sometimes IxQuick results are better than StartPage results. So if I can't find what I'm looking for on StartPage, I can always find it on IxQuick. And both of these, when you go to StartPage.com or IxQuick.com, there's a little link that says add it to your browser. I would encourage you to click that, and then it'll be in the pull-down menu in the upper right-hand corner of your Firefox or Safari browser, or your Internet Explorer. There's also a link that says make it your homepage. And I would encourage everyone listening today, if Google is your homepage, go to Start Page or IxQuick and make that your homepage instead. It takes about a week. It's kind of painful to make an adjustment because we're all creatures of habit. But I'll tell you, the joy of knowing that the last 500 searches you did for really personal information just are erased and eliminated and not on Google servers is worth every bit of maybe adjustment you might have to make. So it's hugely popular. We've got a couple million people using it and giving us really good feedback, and it's been around for IxQuick's been around for nearly 10 years, so we've been at this for some time. We're third-party certified, based outside the U.S. Under Dutch jurisdiction, which is really important with programs like PRISM and the Patriot Act and all those other things, which we are not subject to and will not respond to those kinds of requests coming in. So it's a really terrific company, and I encourage everybody to make the switch.
Hey, Preppers and Patriots. That's the end of part one of my interview with Dr. Catherine Albright. And tune in next week and we'll play the second half of that interview. Thanks so much for listening. God bless and happy prepping.
In the Days of Noah, Book 2, Persecution by best-selling author Mark Goodwin. A globalist conspiracy transpires by way of a false flag attack against America's energy infrastructure. Noah and Cassandra Parker witness a complete economic meltdown, which is intentionally triggered by the event. The assault is blamed on patriots and Christians who are rounded up into detention centers across the country. Noah and his friends must take action to prepare for the meltdown and defend against the totalitarian regime, which is gunning for their freedom and, quite possibly, their very lives. Get your copy of The Days of Noah, Book 2, Persecution for Kindle, paperback, or audio edition at Amazon.com today.